This is Philosophy Bites with me, David Edmonds.
And me, Nigel Warburton.
Philosophy Bites is available at www.philosophybites.com.
Philosophy Bites is made in association with the Institute of Philosophy.
In 1994, most of the world stood by as up to a million Tutsis were massacred in Rwanda. A decade later, there was a highly contentious intervention elsewhere, the US-led invasion of Iraq. Historically, most theories about the just war have been rooted in the idea of the nation-state. For example, it's generally considered fair to go to war in self-defence if your nation is itself unjustifiably attacked. But Cecil Tharp of Oxford University believes we should develop a theory of war which is based not on the nation, but on the rights of individuals. She calls this a cosmopolitan theory of the just war.
Cecil Tharp, welcome to Philosophy Bites.
Good morning, it's very nice to be here.
The topic we're going to focus on today is cosmopolitanism and war. They're not obviously connected, but let's take cosmopolitanism first. What is cosmopolitanism?
Well, there are various kinds of cosmopolitanism, but if we focus on moral cosmopolitanism, which is what interests me, broadly speaking, it is the view that individuals are what matters, and that all individuals, wherever they are in the world, have rights to fundamental freedoms and the basic necessities of life, and also that those rights impose duties on their state primarily, but also on foreign actors when their states are unable or unwilling to fulfill those duties.
What matters then is that human rights are respected all over the world, not just in the West or in particular small parts of the world.
That's absolutely right. I don't think you could be a cosmopolitan and deny that view.
How does that relate to war then? I mean, we know what cosmopolitanism is now.
That's an interesting question. So the just war tradition, in the West at any rate, you know, has developed in a fairly statist way, particularly from the 17th century onwards. So from the 17th century onwards, in the just war tradition, the main actors are states and not individuals. And what I find interesting is the parallel development of those two bodies of literature in the last 15 years, the literature on cosmopolitanism on the one hand, and the mushrooming literature on war on the other hand, and yet those two bodies of thought don't really connect. So my question is, well, if you're a cosmopolitan, what are you committing yourself to when it comes to what is a just war?
What are the reasons that are traditionally given for just wars?
Self-defense is the paradigmatic example. So self-defense against a unwarranted military aggression. Defense of others, that's another paradigmatic just cause. The recovery of wrongfully taken property and punishment. The tradition does believe that punitive wars are permissible, where, for example, you want to punish barbarians who offend God, for example.
So presumably cosmopolitans, moral cosmopolitans, don't echo all those views. I mean, they're going to say that some of those aren't really just causes for war, but other things are. What are the key features of a cosmopolitan approach to the question of a just war?
That's interesting. I don't think a cosmopolitan could argue in favour of punitive wars, you know, for various reasons having to do with individual responsibility, also having to do with traditional objections as levelled by cosmopolitans against capital punishment. So if you think that killing is not an appropriate form of punishment, then you don't want to endorse the views that punishment is a just cause for war. Now, when it comes to defence of others, again, you know, a cosmopolitan will agree with the tradition that that's a just cause for war, but where I think the cosmopolitan will differ from the tradition will be in claiming that there are cases where there is a duty to go to war in defence of others and not merely a permission. And that's because, you know, cosmopolitans generally believe that there is a very strong duty to provide assistance to distant strangers when distant strangers are in need, whether the need is a need for food or whether the need is a need for being rescued, you know, from a genocidal tyrant.
I'm intrigued here because the conventionally accepted spectrum of human rights includes rights such as the right to freedom of speech. When that's infringed, is that a sufficient reason for going to war? There has to be more than that. It's not just that there's a transgression of some human right. There has to be more going on.
That's absolutely right. So not all rights violations provide a just cause for war. There the debate becomes a bit technical. So on the one hand, you have people who say, well, violations of fundamental rights are prima facie just cause for war, but then you have to look at whether the war would be a proportionate response. And many people would argue war can never be a proportionate response to violations of the right to freedom of speech. Other philosophers say that we must build proportionality into the just cause idea. So on that view, a violation of the right to freedom of speech cannot be a just cause for war. Those people would say just causes for war are rights violations such as the right not to be tortured, the right not to be killed, and so on and so forth.
I'm intrigued to know how any such just war could be conducted, given that it's being conducted not on behalf of any particular state. What would happen that some kind of global organisation would decide that there has been this violation of rights and then various countries get together and provide armies which collaborate? Is that the idea?
That would be one of the ideas. And in fact, I myself am leaning more and more to the view that when it comes to humanitarian intervention, the best way to do it would be precisely to have some sort of international army, the main task of which would be precisely to carry out those interventions with a mandate from an internationally recognised institution. Whether the UN can be that institution, I don't know. But I think even if that is the best way to do it, I wouldn't want this to imply that it is the only morally acceptable way to do it. I mean, take the case of Rwanda, where UN approval for an intervention in April 1994 certainly wasn't forthcoming. I mean, I do think that even though there was no UN approval at that time, you know, if a country like the US or France had gone in of their own initiative, that would have been just. So at the very least, there would have been a just cause. Cosmopolitan morality is likely to think that there is a broader range of cases where we may go to war, simply because there is a broader range of rights and a broader range of duty bearers than there would be in other, you know, more state-centered moralities. So, for example, if you are a cosmopolitan, you know, you are more likely to take the view that wars of humanitarian intervention, for example, are not merely morally permitted, but in fact are morally mandatory.
What about people who are going to say, look, so much for cosmopolitanism, I don't believe in it, I'm actually a nationalist, I believe in my own country, the nation state is far more important than the world, there's no place for a world view here.
I think there are at least two things that you can try and say in response. I mean, first of all, even non-cosmopolitan moralities have accepted there are moral restraints on the conduct of war, the point of which is to protect enemy non-combatants. So from that perspective, you know, the fact that enemy non-combatants belong to the enemy has always been thought not to constitute justification for killing them deliberately. You don't have to be a cosmopolitan in order to endorse the principle of non-combatant immunity. So I would say to the nationalist, well, if you endorse non-combatant immunity, then that means that you do accept that there are cases where the national interest has to give way to the value of life or the right not to be killed of those enemy. And so you open the door for the view that cosmopolitans would accept that there are some cases, at any rate, where political borders or community membership is irrelevant as to whether who gets to live, who gets to die. Now, you could have a diehard, you know, nationalist who would say, well, I reject the principle of non-combatant immunity. Some philosophers, in fact, have said that when our country faces a situation of so-called supreme emergency, i.e. Britain in 1940, then it is permissible deliberately to bomb enemy civilian centres. And at that point, you know, then it becomes very difficult to argue against someone who is so adamant that the national interest, you know, has this sort of, you know, overriding priority over the lives of innocent people. One of the things that you can do is to ask that person, well, do you think that then you would have grounds for complaining if the enemy kills you, an innocent civilian, in order to further their just cause? Well, if you think you have a ground for complaining, then, you know, you fail to abide by something like the Golden Rule and so on and so forth.
Well, does that mean, therefore, that moral cosmopolitans are going to be in danger of losing quite a few wars because they won't play dirty?
Yes, and I think it's a very deep and difficult question, which, you know, many armies, including the US army in Afghanistan, Iraq and so on, or Israel, are facing in the occupied territories. A committed cosmopolitan would have to accept that they cannot play dirty the way the enemy does, and that means losing some wars.
Isn't there a danger as well that you might end up endorsing all kinds of wars that wouldn't otherwise have happened?
At first sight, yes, because of course, you know, the greater the range of rights, violations of which, you know, you regard as just causes, the more likely it is that, you know, you will say, well, this war is a just war. But on the other hand, cosmopolitans will in fact commit themselves, or are more at risk to committing themselves, to a form of pacifism for the following reason. Cosmopolitans put a huge premium on respect for life. They are very wary of allowing people to participate in wars, you know, which are unjust. And that does seem to lead to the view that the default position should be not to go to war, because the risk that you are going to kill people who do not, in fact, deserve to be killed is so high that you'd better desist. And in fact, a number of us, you know, who write in that field and who have cosmopolitan leanings, we are becoming more aware of the fact that we probably will end up endorsing a form of moderate pacifism, which, of course, is very difficult, because when you're faced with Rwanda in April 94, you don't want to be a moderate pacifist in a particular case.
So has there been a recent example of a war which might be clear-cut in relation to cosmopolitanism that wouldn't necessarily have been justified by other just war theorists?
I can't think of one. I mean, the only example which might come close might be the NATO bombing of Serbia in the late 90s. You'll have noticed that I used might, not is, because there are issues about the way the bombing took place and the degree to which, in particular, it seems NATO pilots were instructed to preserve their own lives by flying very high, as a result of which quite a substantial number of bombs ended up on civilian centres with, you know, disproportionate numbers of casualties. So, but, you know, setting that difficulty aside, that would be the clearest case. But, you know, it's a limited action over a few weeks, you know, by air. We're not talking about massive land campaign. If we look to massive land campaigns, I cannot think of any example, really, since the end of the Second World War.
The recent Iraq war is surely an example of getting rid of a tyrant, whether it's justified on humanitarian grounds or other grounds. Would that be the kind of war which a cosmopolitan would consider just?
Getting rid of a tyrant, ala Saddam Hussein, clearly would be a just cause for war. A cosmopolitan might even want to say that there might have been a prima facie duty to the Iraqis to go to war, to help them get rid of Saddam Hussein. However, just cause is not the only thing that matters. You know, there are issues such as, well, authority, who authorizes the war. But I think more importantly in that case, as you know, one of the most often voiced criticisms of that war is the allegedly complete lack of attention that the coalition forces paid to what would happen once the war would be over. And if you believe, and I think cosmopolitans would believe, that what happens after the war, post bellum, must be taken into account for the war to be deemed just, all things considered, well, then that war wouldn't count as a just war.
Do you think that politicians should consult cosmopolitan philosophers and theorists before they make decisions about going to war?
Oh, absolutely. Generally, I believe politicians should consult philosophers, if only because their own political rhetoric is suffused with philosophical views, which I think, you know, warrant articulation and clarification. And if there is one thing that philosophers can bring to the table, is precisely the skills that they acquire and develop to do with conceptual clarification, disentangling various strands of argument, you know, identifying the right objections, and so on and so forth.
Cecil Farb, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
There's now a Philosophy Bites book published by Oxford University Press. For more information, go to www.philosophybites.com.
For more information about the Institute, go to www.philosophy.sas.ac.uk.